Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Last night, President Donald Trump addressed a group of investors and executives in Miami, and he doubled down on his criticism of the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky as a dictator without elections, and said Russia held the cards when it comes to negotiations on ending the war. In his wide-ranging speech, the US President covered several other topics, starting with Elon Musk's clampdown on overspending in government departments. Let's have a listen.
It gets worse. 3.47 million people are on Social Security from the age of 120 years old to 129 years old. 3.9 million people are on the age of Social Security from 130 years old to 139 years old. Now, the all-time record, I heard, is a woman who was 127 years old. That's the record. But we're topping her by millions.
Topping her by millions. Well, he also referenced Tom Cruise and the work of the U.S. Air Force.
I flew to Iraq, and late at night, the dark of night, all the windows closed, all the lights off in the plane, and Air Force One. And we flew in, and it was pretty amazing, I'll tell you. We were landing, and there were no lights in the plane. Sir, we have to turn off all lights. I said, you mean we spend $9 trillion and we have to fly in and Air Force One with the lights off? And I went up to the pilot, said hello. And by the way, these guys are like central casting. These are the best-looking human beings. Everybody is like perfect. The most handsome people, the best-looking people you've ever seen with the flat tops and the whole thing. I'm looking at these people, and again, I say, they look like Tom Cruise, but better. Stronger, tougher. And I like Tom Cruise, but these are better.
He also talked about cutting diversity programs in government.
But I've ended all of the so-called diversity, equity, and inclusion programs across the entire federal government and private sector, and notified every single government DEI officer that their jobs have been deleted. They're all deleted.
Well, that's Donald Trump speaking in Miami a number of hours ago. Joining me on the line now is Sarah Firth, who's a freelance foreign correspondent in Washington. So as we heard there, Sarah, there were a lot of topics that President Trump covered there. But what were the main points from that speech and that presentation?
Yes, this was Trump as president, but it was also Trump as business leader. He's speaking at this investment conference in Miami. And the big takeaway message for him that he wanted to get across was that, look, if you want to push boundaries in business, make a fortune, there's no better place than Trump's America. It was a very, very receptive crowd. You had his right-hand man, Elon Musk, in the crowd there. But really, I think what everyone was waiting for listening to that and what President Trump then did was, as you said, Claire, double down, triple down on his criticisms of Ukrainian President Zelensky. Sort of watching it, you were waiting with bated breath for the criticism when it came. And he went further, you know, saying Zelensky's not just a dictator without elections, but at one point saying he better move fast or he won't have a country left. So, you know, the response has been pretty immediate across the country. There are a lot of people here in Washington who are saying simply they can't believe that some of the words that are being said are coming out of a sitting US president's mouth.
And we'll come to more about Ukraine and the response to that in just a moment. But I just want to go back to some of the other issues that he covered. You mentioned Elon Musk was there. He was sitting in the audience at that speech. People have been watching for this to see how this relationship is going to play out between Elon Musk and Donald Trump. And this was the first time he criticised him publicly, saying that he had his faults. But then he went on to say that Elon Musk, he believes, is saving America millions of dollars. How did the room react to all of that? And how did Elon Musk react?
Well, you saw Elon Musk in his now sort of infamous black cap. He was nodding along to a lot of what Donald Trump was saying. Look, it was a very receptive crowd in that room in Miami, a lot of business people. You know, Trump saying he likes high IQ people. So, yes, a concession that perhaps Elon has some flaws, but overall, he was widely praised. And Elon Musk got a standing ovation. So you're right, people are watching very closely as to how this relationship between the president and a billionaire Elon Musk plays out. But we've already seen the remarkable images of Musk with his four-year-old son sort of shoulder to shoulder with Donald Trump in the Oval Office when there was an executive order signed. And again, at this conference in Miami, you know, he's got a front row seat and he's got a big mention.
Now, tariffs is a subject that makes everyone in this part of the world, indeed internationally, very jittery. But he reiterated his support for tariffs. He believes that in the long run, they are going to be beneficial to the American economy.
Yes. And again, President Donald Trump going a bit further, saying that he will be announcing fresh tariffs over the next couple of months. And potentially adding more products to those plans to impose duties on things like cars. The tariff issue is making a lot of people very nervous. I mean, even here in the US, you've got a lot of concern over what potentially that will mean for the US economy if you have reciprocal tariffs imposed. But again, you know, this was part of Trump as businessman doing what he does best. And he was talking to a crowd of business leaders at this conference.
Mm-hmm. He had some advice for Europe, too, when it comes to migration. He said that he's getting them out, meaning that he is returning people who he believes shouldn't be in the United States to the countries that he came from. He claims a success there, too, Sarah.
He does. And a warning for Europe, you know, that they need to act before it's too late. I think what's interesting, Claire, is that the immigration has been such a huge focal point here in the country. It was the platform on which Donald Trump ran for president. So he feels very strongly he's got a mandate to take this kind of action. And we have already seen very, very swift action here from the Department for Immigration. There have been some pretty eye-opening videos shared by the White House, people sort of hands in chains being escorted onto planes, deported. They have taken a very hardline stance this administration. And there is a real human cost here as well. You know, across the country, I've been speaking to people in various communities that are absolutely terrified about what this could potentially mean for them. So there's a lot of people very nervous.
Sarah, thank you for joining us from Washington. That's Sarah Firth. Let's go to Ukraine now. And Richard Gaisford, who is chief correspondent with ITV's Good Morning Britain. Richard, you're in Kyiv, I understand now. I mean, the comments again, Sarah described them as not just doubling down, but tripling down on his criticism of President Zelensky. What has been the reaction overnight in Kyiv?
They're deeply worrying for people here. You're speaking to them and they're saying it is the overriding thought. They wonder what's going to happen next. And they now know, in effect, Claire, that their fate lies really in this, how easy it is to upset Donald Trump. You know, quite clearly, President Zelensky was angered by the fact that the US president had been repeating Russian propaganda, amping up that those messages about his leadership and his popularity, which were completely false. Also relaying false facts about the amount of money that had come from the United States here into Ukraine as well. And, you know, people genuinely concerned about what's going to happen. But they are saying that despite the fact they need America, it is the single biggest country donor. But, you know, in contrast to what Donald Trump has said, it doesn't give the most amount of money. European countries together have given more. They say they will fight on without the United States. But it does seem at this point that, you know, normalizing relations with Russia seem more important to President Trump than it does actually helping out Ukraine in what is a desperate situation as we're about to enter a fourth year of this conflict.
President Zelensky does have to be careful, though, how he plays this one, doesn't he? And we'll see how he intends to work with the Americans today. He's got that meeting with the US Special Envoy for Ukraine, Keith Kellogg. Now, what are you expecting from that meeting?
Well, we're expecting Mr. Kellogg to be taken out onto the streets of Kyiv, to be shown around, to meet people. The issue, though, I think, is that it appears Mr. Kellogg has been almost sidelined by Donald Trump. You know, he sent his special envoy here, and yet all of the headlines are about what Donald Trump is saying. The special envoy, it seems, also does not hold the same strident views that Donald Trump does. He's much more open-minded. And yet you worry that even if he comes back with a report saying this is what America needs to do, that he's not necessarily going to be listened to. So Zelensky wants to offer him hospitality, wants to have constructive conversations with him and the US. But really, this is now all in the hands of the US President, Donald Trump. And that is what's frightening people here, because as we've seen and heard from your reporting earlier, you know, not everything he says always makes sense, and not everything he says is always right.
Thank you very much, Richard, for joining us from Ukraine. Let's go to Anand Menon, who's director of UK in a Changing Europe. Anand, thank you for being with us this morning. We've heard the view from Washington. We hear what's happening in Ukraine, where things are very much on a knife edge. Where do you believe this goes here for now?
Well, I mean, the first thing to say is it's just incredibly unpredictable. No one knows from one moment to the next what Donald Trump is going to do. I think the view here in London is what we have to do is try and keep the Americans engaged in this process, try and persuade them that the peace can't come on Russian terms, and crucially try and persuade them that if there is an end to the conflict, the Americans need to be part of any peacekeeping force that is sent to try and preserve the peace between Ukraine and Russia.
I spoke there about President Zelensky having to be very careful how he handles this one. So too for Keir Starmer, the British Prime Minister. Now, he came out and he called President Zelensky to offer support last night. But he does have to be careful in how he deals with what President Trump has been saying about the Ukrainian president.
Oh, absolutely. And unlike some European leaders, he hasn't directly criticised President Trump. I mean, in his remarks last night, he said the opposite to what President Trump has said about the lack of elections in Ukraine and things like that. But remember, Keir Starmer is going later this week to see President Trump in Washington. And I think the British government is placing a lot of faith in Keir Starmer's ability to, if you like, talk the president down a bit, to try and persuade him that actually simply giving in to what Russia wants isn't going to be a victory for the United States or for the West. So unless and until, you know, at the moment, Keir Starmer's priority is to stay on good terms with President Trump in the hope that he can have a serious conversation with him when he sees him in Washington.
Well, maybe there's an opportunity here for Britain for the first time since Brexit to be seen as a really important player, a bridge between the EU and the United States.
I mean, to an extent, I'm not convinced many EU member states see it that way. And of course, remember, EU member states have their own links with Washington. We don't know yet whether Starmer's going to see Trump before Macron does. Giorgia Meloni in Italy has a very close relationship. I think there are a number of bridges between Europe and the United States. But certainly, I think from a British point of view, the government is quite pleased by this rhetoric, by people talking about the UK in terms of this bridge between Europe and the EU. And I think crucially for Starmer, what he has to try and do is remain on good terms with the US and the EU, which, given the unpredictability of President Trump, is going to be a really difficult task.
Mm-hmm. Whatever happens, and we've spoken about the, you know, unpredictability of this entire situation, but given what we've seen so far, it does have and will have a significant impact on Europe, won't it, Anand, and how we view security?
Oh, it'll have an impact on Europe in a number of ways. I mean, firstly, because there's a real fear in Europe that apart from letting Ukraine grow, President Trump might actually start backing out of NATO or weakening NATO. So there's a question of European self-defense here. Then there's the question of whether or not Europeans will be left to shoulder the full cost of supporting Ukraine, both in the war and in the peace. And of course, as your correspondent mentioned earlier, there is that looming threat of tariffs on top of all of that.
Mm-hmm. All of this needs to be figured out and worked through. I mean, we were speaking about the offer from the British Prime Minister earlier in the week to put boots on the ground in Britain. I mean, the logistics of doing that, the cost of doing that, is that something that the British public, already going through a difficult economic moment, are willing to bear?
Well, the British public are very strongly in support of Ukraine and very hostile to Russia. So that much is clear. What we don't know is whether the British public are so supportive of Ukraine that they'd be willing to pay more tax to fund a bigger military. So mm-hmm. That's something we'll find out over time. I think the other issue facing the UK is not just that our army is very stretched and undermanned, so actually finding the people to send to Ukraine might be slightly difficult, but also the fact that Europeans are so dependent on the United States for their security that even if European troops enter Ukraine, they're going to need significant logistical backup from the Americans. And of course, no one's quite sure whether the Americans will be prepared to provide that.
Anand, thank you very much for being with us. Anand Menon there.